Super Talk Mississippi Media Production.
State Treasurer David McRae is returning record amounts of money to Mississippians, whether it's through the College and Career Savings Program or the hundreds of millions in unclaimed money awaiting your claim. Treasurer David McRae says get your applications and claims in today. Treasury.ms.gov.
It's Mississippi's Radio Happy Hour.
But I'm going to Mississippi, Mississippi, here I come.
You're listening to Good Things with Rebecca Turner.
But I'm going to Mississippi, Mississippi, here I come.
Bringing you the good stories of Mississippi's people, places, and things to do. Now, here's Rebecca.
Good afternoon, Super Talk Mississippi. You're tuned into your Radio Happy Hour. That's a good thing. So I'm your host, Rebecca Turner, and I don't forget, you can listen to Good Things. We are streaming live over at supertalk.fm. We're also streaming from that Super Talk Mississippi app and your local Super Talk Mississippi radio station. You can watch us too. We are on your computer, your mobile device. Just head on over to Super Talk TV. And if you've been watching out for our favorite little birds this time of year, that would be the hummingbirds, then you're going to be interested in our next guest, Dr. Mark LaSalle. He is headed to the Mississippi Museum of Natural Science on April 7th. He is going to be their keynote speaker for their noon lecture series. And he's joining us today to give us a little sneak peek about what he'll be bringing and talking about. So welcome.
Oh, you're glad to be here, Rebecca.
Well, I love this time of year. For those who have listened to Good Things, they know that over the years I have moved homes, and I am so sad that my birds haven't moved with me. And each year I try to find ways to bring more hummingbirds to our backyard. So this sounds like the perfect time to get some tips and tricks from you. But give us a little background. How did hummingbirds and the landscaping of it kind of become a topic you know a lot about?
Well, you know, I'm a biologist by training, and, you know, I'm trying to be retired these days, Rebecca, but it's hard to do when everybody thinks I have all this great time on my hands to talk about things. But, you know, I've been involved with birds and wildlife, fish, all kinds of things for my entire career. And, you know, a lot of it focuses around my interest in native plants, which is a big, you know, issue for, you know, any type of wildlife, not just birds. But really, it's nothing more than just a conversation about how native plants can feed all kinds of wildlife. But, of course, as you mentioned, you know, hummingbirds are near and dear to a lot of people's heart. They love to see them in their yards. They feed them, and it's all good. But here's just another opportunity for me and other folks to promote using native plants to feed them.
Well, I know people enjoy them, and I get super jealous, Dr. LaSalle, when I see the videos of people with their feeders up, and they've got them swarming, and then it's like they are the house on the block or whatever, the party, and then I put out the same feeders, and it's like nobody wants to come to play.
Oh, yeah. Don't you love those neighbors? Yeah.
But it's also good. So why, I guess, should you say, like, why should we be thinking about the things to plant or the native plants to bring into our backyards or as we're thinking through our spring plants, not just for the hummingbirds, but just for the overall good of the ecosystem with us here in Mississippi?
Sure. That's good. That's a great question. So I'll start by saying this. You know, what did hummingbirds do before we showed up and put feeders out, right? So, you know, they can take care of themselves. There are a few birds in the world that, you know, have become dependent upon humans, but hummingbirds are not one of them. Now, they'll come to that feeder, as you say, and your neighbors, they're just putting more sugar in the water, it must be. But, they, you know, here's the thing. Natural nectar is so much better for them than sugar water. Nothing wrong with sugar water. I mean, there's nothing wrong. Just use that. It's fine. You're not doing anything wrong. But, you know, good natural nectar is so much better. And the other part of that conversation is that many of the plants that I talk about and others promote that feed hummingbirds, you know, are connected to them as their pollinators. I mean, hummingbirds are great pollinators of many, many species of plants. And many of us believe that a lot of the native plants that we're talking about that bloom throughout that time that hummingbirds are here during the year, or they're waiting for those hummingbirds. They may not be exclusively pollinated by hummingbirds, but they certainly are a major part of that cycle, of that connection between hummingbirds and plants. What? So, you know, a lot of them time they're flowering to when hummingbirds show up.
Oh, isn't evolution cool, Dr. LaSalle, that's kind of neat. When is that like hummingbird season? I know some of us are already spotting them in our backyards here, at least in central Mississippi. I'm sure probably more in south Mississippi, not so much sure north, maybe too cold or maybe it's not. What is that kind of like sweet spot for hummingbird migration in Mississippi?
Another good question. You've been doing your homework. So
I love the little birds. I want them in my backyard.
I agree with you. I know. But, you know, so we talk in this case about ruby-throated hummingbirds, which is the eastern U.S.'s hummingbirds. So there are actually 18 species in the U.S. 17 of them are western birds. And we get some of them in the wintertime. They migrate or wander up in our Atlantic woods. But for ruby throats, I always tell people it's the Ides of March. The middle of March is when you start to see the millions and millions of them start to return to the eastern U.S. from Costa Rica and middle, you know, down in Latin America. That's where they spend the winter. And they show up here, and they fly all the way to Canada. I mean, there's some of the birds that, you know, keep going, and they nest in Canada, and they turn around in the fall, and they go on back. So we're talking mid-March when they first arrive, and you're right, the coast gets them first, clearly, and then they migrate further north. It takes several weeks, probably a month and a half, 2 months to get all the way to Canada. And then it'll turn back around, August, September is when you start to see that fall pulse of migration out of North America. And by the time late October, 1st of November or so, the ruby throaters are largely gone. They're gone. They're back in South America. We do get those winter hummers that come. So we will often tell people, keep a feeder up in the wintertime, and you'll see one of those western birds that comes in, one, two at a time, but that's about it. But that's a great question. That's the season. And again, those plants that I talk about and lots of other people, friends of mine, talk about, feed them throughout that year.
Well, that was going to be my next question, is because normally the things that we start planting are hanging, and that's where my education starts to lack is on like plant names and all, Dr. LaSalle. But I know I can plant some pretty hangers in my front on my front porch, and the birds tend to love those. But those don't normally do not last, you know, until early November. So, what are those plants? I know we want to come to your and hear your series on April 7th, but a little teaser into what some of those plants may be for us.
Yeah, so I mean, starting now, for example, on the Gulf Coast. And it progresses as you go further north. So right now, I usually hear the first hummers at the tops of the trees feeding on crossvine. It's a beautiful trumpet-shaped, reddish-orange flower at the tops of the trees, because that's where it blooms early, mid-March. And then red buckeye is in full bloom right here now. And they are just tearing those up, the first of birds. And then as you go into later part of the summer, in spring, I should say, one of my favorites is something called coral bean, great native plant, long red tubular flowers, great for hummers. Scarlet sage, a lot of people plant that in their flower beds. It's brilliant red. It's beautiful. That will bloom and feed hummers all summer. Coral honeysuckle, our native honeysuckle, does that all summer. Turk's cap lily, people will plant that in the yard. So there's some of these birds, or plants, I should say, that people already know that feed butterflies, but they also feed hummers. And then in late fall, you get a wonderful blue salvia. So it's not just red plants. They are hungry for nectar, okay? So they're going to go to whatever color flower has nectar. But that's sort of the progression, and I've got several other plants I talk about. But those are the ones that are, again, connected to when the birds are here.
Are there any no-nos that we should not do that repel them? I don't know if repel is the right word for the birds, but that turns them away. I know for some plants or animals that, you know, they don't like the smell or the sight or whatever it may be. Are there any big no-nos or don't-dos?
You know, for hummingbirds, I'm not aware of any because they're smarter than we give them credit for. Some birds, like there's some berry-producing horticultural plants that can poison birds, okay? But in the case of hummers, I'm not aware of anything that will hurt them. Now, except for old sugar water, and again, you know, keep your feeder clean and with fresh nectar. Now, the one big thing that people say all the time, do not use white table sugar and water. Four parts to one. Okay. Do not use honey. Do not use any other source of nectar of sweetness. Just table sugar. That's the only big no-no. They don't process honey like we do. But other than that, no. Another thing I would say is, you know, it's not a myth, it's just a misunderstanding, is nectar is only about 20% of their diet. They don't live on nectar alone. They eat a ton of small insects. That's what they feed their babies. So nectar really is sort of the energy drink we're providing them, or native plants are providing them for doing what they do.
So cool. So why don't they like me?
I think they may, well, no, they may be spiking it with something else in that sugar water. You got to go check your neighbor and see what recipe they've got.
I'm going to try to do better this year.
Yeah. Well, I think what happens, and this is what probably is going on, they remember exactly where that feeder was when you took it down in the fall. And hummers will actually fly up, your neighbor, you go ask your neighbor, they will fly up to the window in mid-March if you haven't hung that feeder up, and they're like, hey, there was a feeder here last year, where is it? So those people have been feeding them year in, year in, year out, and they come back. So that's the key. Just get a bunch of feeders out there and try to keep up with the Joneses. There you go.
Well, I'm coming for them. I'm coming for my neighbor's hummingbirds this year, Dr. LaSalle. I'm going to try to steal them all with all
your
tips.
Get you a bunch of feeders. Put them up right now. Keep them clean, and they'll show up.
And people, if they want to come and hear your lecture, I know it's free for the Mississippi Museum of Natural Science Museum members, but it's also included in regular museum admission. That's coming up April the 7th at noon. I think it's going to be a fascinating talk. I truly appreciated your time today and all your knowledge, so thank you.
I've enjoyed it. Thank you, Rebecca.
All righty, you guys stick with us. We got more for you coming up next.
Once in a lifetime.
The one box. Listening to Mississippi's Radio Happy Hour. Good things with Rebecca Turner here on Super Talk Mississippi. Now, let's have some fun.
Things. Don't forget we are streaming live over at supertalk.fm, also streaming from that Supertalk Mississippi app and your local Supertalk Mississippi radio station. You can watch us too. We are on your computer, your mobile device. Just head on over to Supertalk TV. You can also watch us on your Roku, Amazon Fire TV devices, even YouTube. You can catch Supertalk TV on CSpire TV if you've got that. We are on Channel 70 right next to the Weather Channel. Just go to supertalk.fm/connect to find out more. Or if you wanted to find out more about hummingbirds, but you missed our last guest, you can always find it too in podcast form or up on YouTube later after the show. But I was trying to make notes, Rhino, while Dr. LaSalle was with us. He will be at the Mississippi Museum of Natural Science on April the 7th as their noon lecturer. How cool would it be just to be able to go lunch and learn with someone like that? I know Dan in Hattiesburg said hummingbirds can remember where the feeders are, but they have to hum because they can't remember the words. I'm not sure that's why they hum, but I think it's fascinating that they can remember where their feeders were from year to year. It does make me feel left out when I see neighbors have more birds than me, but we haven't been at our house as long as we were in our previous ones. And now it makes me wonder sometimes, do my other birds wonder where I went? And if the other owners of that home are keeping up with my birds the way that I did, and I'm sure they are. There's something about us here in the South. We love our hummingbirds and birds in general. But some of the tips and tricks, though, that he's mentioned that I thought were worthy of repeating was, and I've heard it say before, and you've probably heard the 4-to-1 mixture of the water to the white granulated sugar, no other kind of fancy sugar. It should be boiled to dissolve. And never use honey, which I hadn't heard that, and especially not artificial sweeteners. I can't imagine that being good for the birds. Or red dye, which I would have to ask, like, because sometimes you buy the pre-made kind of feed mix that comes, and either it comes in like the packets and then it's you put water in it, or it already comes already 4-to-1, which feels like a waste of money. I mean, a little math, 4-to-1 water if you got it in the, you know, got it in the pantry. But hey, we all spend our discretionary income where we want to. It also is red. And so I wonder, you know, is it better or per Dr. LaSalle's kind of recommendations, it sounds like, let me say it that way, it would be better just to sort of make it at home from your pantries, white granulated sugar and water, and sort of being able to leave out the red dye. I also, were you going to say something?
Yeah, I was just going to say, from what limited understanding I have of hummingbirds and the red dye debate, there haven't been any studies done to determine what the red dye does to hummingbirds.
Mm-hmm.
So the notion that it's toxic isn't really supported by any scientific studies. But just like he was saying with honey, they process things differently than mm-hmm. we do. And just because there's not any scientific consensus on the red dye being harmful, there is anecdotal evidence of reduction in population numbers, reduction in visiting birds and stuff like that. So the recommendation is use a red feeder. Don't use the red nectar.
Right. And I would think it just makes sense, right? Like, why put the dye in there if it's not necessary, if it's not adding any value, if they can't tell any difference, then just eliminating that just feels like, why not? Why not, you know, make that sort of small sort of change to it? One thing, though, as he was talking that I thought, oh, maybe I don't do well enough, especially in this busy season and as the summer kicks up, they do recommend that you change your feeders out every 2 to 5 days, particularly maybe closer to that 2 or 3 when it gets really hot as we move into those summer months, and then clean the feeders thoroughly to prevent any kind of mold. They don't like, I guess, when the sugar sours. And I'm like, oh, maybe that's my problem. I mean, maybe I don't clean them out as often as I feel like I should. I mean, days go by really fast, and I'm trying to keep my ferns alive, people, and they take a lot of water on the front porch. But that's just kind of a good reminder, too. I'm going to try that a little bit differently this year.
Sugar plus water plus heat plus time equals alcohol.
Well, you would think they would love my house. Okay. Maybe not. I get it. But that might be something different I could try this year, along with maybe planting some of the things that he kind of mentioned. I think it's super cool that there's like plants that understand the ecosystem and over like, I don't know, I don't want to say like a number of years and sound smart like that, but like, not that the plants like wait on the hummingbirds specifically, know what they're doing, but like Mother Nature just kind of helped, you know, put those type of things together. So the hummingbirds come and feed and then help them sort of pollinate. Like, how cool is our maker? Like, that's just really neat to me. Another thing I was going to try this year, and I have zero attachments to it, but I have a friend who posts her videos all the time of her bird feeder that also has a camera in it. And I won't share the name of it because I guess, you know, whatever. But they're easy to find online if that's what you're doing. And it's fascinating to me. She's already got her, like, some of her little hummingbirds. So they have a hummingbird-specific one that's got, like, the little camera that connects to an app on your phone. And sometimes you wonder, like, are you sure that's your backyard? Are they just feeding me videos of fake, fake hummingbirds? Apparently, it has nothing, you know, it doesn't do anything wrong to the hummingbird. They're just being stalked. But you're stalking them anyway. From your back porch or, you know, your breakfast room table or wherever you're watching them in the morning, drinking your coffee or in the afternoon. So I think I may treat myself to one of those and see if the hype's there and if I can even meet my little friends a little bit closer. Seems like that would be a better way of spending my scrolling time, is watching my birds on my back porch than, you know, other social media accounts.
Since this is good things, I'll keep it vague. But if you do install any camera in or around your home, be sure to point it at something you wouldn't mind the world seeing.
Oh, that's true. And probably away from your neighbors. I mean, it should be in your backyard. But from what I've seen, it's not like a Ring camera that can go that far. It's not that. I mean, it looks as if it just hones in on the feeding part that's directly like near it,
yeah.
And then maybe the ground, like a little bit of the ground sort of around. But yeah, I would think that would be sort of wise advice. But at this point, the way you should also raise your kids and think about it is there's always a camera pointed at you, you know? So you should just live accordingly. Take that for, a grain of salt as well. Jeff in Pontotoc says, I always make my own sugar and water, no dye. using a feeder, some of the same ones will come back to you year after year. They remember, Jeff said. Do you already have yours out, Jeff? Are you already seeing your little friends come pop up? And it's killing me. I can't think of the name of the hanging baskets I always put on my front porch that I get from our local place. They grow so big, and I'm always so proud of them. And they're pink, and they're pretty, and they're very annual this time of year for your hanging baskets. But the birds love those. They love those more on my front porch than they like my humming my feeders on my back porch. So maybe I should just put feeders
cigar
all around.
Plant?
No, it's a
fuchsia.
Starts with a P. It's not a petunia. Perennial. No. You say
perennial's a type.
No, I know.
Lantana?
No. I'll have to Google it. I'll have to look.
Calibrachoa?
No. I can see it. Well, I can see my baskets. They're big and beautiful, and they're pink, and they come in white and yellow, and they come in all the different colors, and they can grow really big and really droopy, but you have to water them all the time. Some people put them in their, I mean, they're good in baskets, but you can also put them in other places. This is why you shouldn't come to me for flowering advice. This is why we have Garden Mama on Saturdays. From 8 to 10. And if she's listening or if Lance is listening, they're both screaming probably at me. I've sent in my photos to the show several times because I'm so proud of them. And yet, here I am. I can't think of the sort of thing. And I don't have the brain capacity to Google and talk at the same time. So we'll have to do that during the break. But Jeff and Pontot says, no, I haven't put mine out just yet. Neither have I. But now that he mentioned it, I think that I may have to at least this weekend go ahead and get them out and give them a good wash. And so go ahead and start to kind of see if we can't start drawing in a few friends to away from the neighbor. I hate to think of it that way, but no, I don't. You have enough to spare. I don't. I see them swarming over there. But
I'm just picturing like putting a neon sign on the roof with like blinking wings flapping on it and butterflies here, or not butterflies, hummingbirds here with a
my
arrow down.
Yes, mine better than whatever half off nectar or can't get this nectar anywhere else, best nectar in the hood. That's
live hummingbird dances.
I don't know. Buy one get one free nectar, ladies night. That took a turn. All right, stick with this, we got more for you coming up next.
Rebecca Turner, bringing you the good stories of Mississippi's people, places, and things to do here on Super Talk Mississippi, the Super Talk app, and at supertalk.fm.
Welcome back to Good Things. Don't forget we are streaming live, as always, over at supertalk.fm. Also streaming from that Supertalk Mississippi app. It is free. We hope you have taken some time to download that. We hope you know, too, it's free to find us on your local Supertalk Mississippi radio station and to watch us on your computer, your mobile device, over at Supertalk TV. And tomorrow, on Wednesday, you got Mornings with Richard Cross. You got the Middays with Gerard Gibbert and the Boys with Sports Talk Mississippi. They're going to be broadcasting at the Columbus Marina tomorrow as the Bassmaster Elite Series comes to town. The Bassmaster Elite Series is the highest level of professional bass fishing tournaments, and it's happening in Columbus this weekend. It is brought to you by A Visit Columbus, the City of Columbus, and the Tennessee Tom Bigbee Waterway Authority. If you want more information, go to bassmaster.visitcolumbus.org. And that kind of throws us back to yesterday when we had Dan Whitley, Man, the Larry the Cable Guy. I was like, I'm going to mess up his last name. Look at me go. But he threw us a little tease there at the end saying that he was going to be bass fishing with Bill Dance. And now I'm like, well, we could have rounded it back and ask if maybe that's because of the Bassmaster that's Elite Series that will be coming to Columbus. And I wonder if he will be fishing here in Mississippi come this weekend after his show at the Heindel Center on Saturday, March the 28th. Who knows? Well, maybe we'll get a good photo of some good bass cult there. Be like, ah, we technically now know him. He's like a friend of the show. So so there you go. Good stuff coming up tomorrow. You can tune in. All the boys will be there and talking a lot of fishing. But we were talking a little bit of hummingbird love a while ago and talking about the plants on my front porch, the hanging baskets that tends to bring them the most each year. And I think it was David in Indianola saved me. Pansies was the word that I couldn't think of. I just know they're pretty and they're pink and they grow really big if you water them every day. And what little hummingbirds that I do get at our home, they all flock to the front porch for those particular flowers, which Dr. LaSalle told us that they prefer natural nectar to, you know, kind of the feeders anyway. So it's good to kind of have that mix for them as
well.
It's
like difference in a bottle and a box when it comes to wine.
Yes. Yes. As you said, I was like, yeah, yes. Oh, me. But speaking of food, we're having a little fun conversation over on the Good Things Facebook group. We tell you all the time, if you need some good headlines or conversations in your news feed, if you choose Facebook as a social media platform you spend a little time on, then you should be part of our ever-growing family there. It's really easy to find. Just type in Good Things With. Rebecca Turner will pop up. And today's kind of fun little question or conversation starter, should I say, is thinking about those foods that we just absolutely disliked as a kid. You turned your nose up at them. You were like, no, thank you. Maybe your mom or your grandmother forced you to eat them or at least try them a couple of times. And you were like, yuck. And then finally, one day, you matured your palate or you cooked them your own way or whatever it may be. And you're like, you know what? It ain't so bad. And so now you would consider it maybe a food that you enjoy. But as a kid, you definitely did not, which I say often. Some of the little especially, I don't like vegetables. And I'm like, you will one day. Like, I mean, I don't know many kids. You may have magical unicorns in your home that just eats all the things. They are rare. And for most kids, they mature into eating a wide variety, at least of the non-starchy vegetables. Everybody likes corn, butter beans, those type of things.
Carrots.
Carrots as a kid. But I saw you kind of had a list there. Rhino, which I thought was intriguing to me that you even knew this. I feel like each one may have a story from your childhood of why you didn't like them. But how has your palate matured over the years?
Well, on the Facebook group, I added my comment. And the first one that came to mind was tomato sandwiches. Mom would make tomato sandwiches and I would just not have one. I did not care for tomato sandwiches until after I got out of college. And was just looking for something cheap and simple and quick to make. And tomatoes were on sale. Got tomatoes. I knew how to make the sandwich. I just didn't like them. Made one. Tried it. Loved it. Haven't turned back. So that was the first one that popped in my head.
Is it just white bread, mayonnaise, tomatoes?
Yeah, just simple tomato sandwich.
A little salt, pepper.
Mom would make them on a hot day. And I would just not eat that particular meal.
So... Is it because you just wouldn't try it? It wasn't until you were an adult that you tried it? Or was there at one point you did try it as a kid and it just wasn't for you?
It just, the flavor, the mouthfeel, the texture, none of it really worked for me as a kid.
I gotcha.
It just felt like this is not a sandwich. I'm definitely not a sandwich.
There's
I want.
There's no ham and cheese here.
Right.
Right, yeah. Okay. So,
and then from there, I started thinking, I was like, well, what else did I try to take off or try to order differently when I was a kid? And I was thinking like, well, when I'd get a baked potato or something. They would ask me butter or sour cream, and I would say butter only as a kid because I couldn't stand sour cream. As an adult, I love sour cream on a baked potato. I like sour cream on a lot of different things. Just wasn't my bag as a kid.
Hmm. I wonder when that changed, if it was just, again, sort of like a visual for you because, I mean, a glob of sour cream isn't the sexiest thing to put on your baked potato, but at some point you realize, man, this just hits a little different with a little sour cream sort of on it.
And in that same vein, cottage cheese. Cottage cheese was definitely one that I looked at as a kid and I was like, that looks like milk that's been left out.
Mm-hmm.
Don't want to eat it because it looks like something that smells bad. So just never ate it until I got into adulthood. And it's like, well, what can I throw together?
Well, there's a lot of adults that still feel that way. It's just simply a visual taste, texture things with cottage cheese. But if you cook with it or blend it, they never know the difference that it's in there, which is so interesting to me that with two picky eaters coming through their early years, both of them would eat cottage cheese, which makes no sense to me. I mean, of all the things that they, you know, that you shouldn't like, that should be one of them for all the reasons you listed. But then they don't like things that just doesn't make any sense, like a baked potato, which now the older one will. But yeah, I don't know when I acquired my affection for cottage cheese, but it's definitely on my favorites list now. But now you will get, I love the memes that say, I've never been more peer pressured to do drugs as much as I have to try cottage cheese. And it does feel like there are some good marketing campaigns here recently in the cottage cheese department. So it's not, I mean, it's a deliciously nutritious food, but it's not a superfood by any stretch. I mean, but it is a good addition if you like the taste.
And there have been some questionable decisions surrounding cottage cheese. And I don't know that they've talked about it on Sports Talk coming up here in a bit, but I did see where the Arizona Diamondbacks out in the desert of Arizona are offering a 16-ounce glass of cottage cheese with celery sticks and carrots as a menu item for their concessions.
Huh. I wonder how much it is, though.
I wouldn't. I like cottage cheese. I just admit it. I like cottage cheese. I'm not sitting in a baseball stadium under the desert sun eating a 16-ounce cup of cottage cheese.
No. But
you'd have to pay me to do that.
You can leave the carrots and the celery sticks and switch it out for a Bloody Mary. And then I would probably pay the same price for said cottage cheese cup. Because you know that thing's going to be high. No, probably not going to be like my baseball snack. But it definitely has taken a turn in terms of popularity. It would hold up better than some of the other things because of the... It just need to be cold. Nobody wants hot
cottage
cheese.
That's why I'm thinking, like, you're literally in Arizona.
Yeah.
It's over 100 for the majority of baseball season, and you're sitting in the stands with a cup of cottage cheese that's getting warmer by the second.
Mm-hmm. Sun-dried tomatoes is also on your list, Rhino, of things that you weren't necessarily into as a kid, but you enjoy as adult. That's kind of a bougier food, too, though. They're expensive.
Yeah, I think I was exposed to a really cheap form of them as, like, a topping on a pizza or something as a kid, so I just had an aversion to them. And then once again, getting to adulthood, shopping for things on the clearance rack, found a jar of them on the clearance rack for like less than a dollar, and I was like, I can find something to do with these, and they were good.
Yeah, I can eat them like candy, and you shouldn't do that because they literally are smothered in oil. But if you make your own pizzas, they're a great topping as well as...
They're also good on cottage cheese.
They're also good on cottage cheese. Olives, you mentioned as well, as kind of being...
Yeah.
That's something I don't think many kids...
That was like the deal breaker on a Supreme pizza.
Yeah.
Was the black olives.
They just look suspicious.
It just looks funny.
It just looks funny. Also great, though, in a Bloody Mary. Sauerkraut, I don't mind it. I definitely didn't eat it as a kid. Absolutely not. I can appreciate it as an adult. I'm not gonna buy it, but I'm also not gonna not have a bite or two of it if it's made available. But it's not, I wouldn't say my go-to food by any stretch.
And I remember occasionally having sauerkraut with a meal growing up, but I don't know if it was either me throwing a fit about not liking it or my little brother not liking it, but I remember it kind of just died off and we no longer had sauerkraut.
Because y'all just ate it all. All right, let us know your foods maybe you just liked as a kid, but you enjoy now as an adult. 601-879-4395. We got that and more coming up next. All I do is sit around and wait for better days. Better days. All I do is sit around and wait for better days.
before you're...
Rebecca Turner.
Over.
Good Things with Rebecca Turner continues on Super Talk Mississippi.
To Good Things. Don't forget we are streaming live as always over at supertalk.fm. Also streaming from that Supertalk Mississippi app and your local Supertalk Mississippi radio station. You can watch us too. We are on your computer, your mobile device. Just head on over to Supertalk TV. And don't forget about our Supertalk Mississippi news team over at supertalk.fm. They are always covering your Mississippi stories, and you don't have to pay a paywall to get to all of that great information. How cool is that? We want you to stay updated. They've got a free weekly newsletter as well. So if you just want to hit the highlights each week in your inbox, you can do that. It goes out on Fridays at supertalk.fm/newsletter. You can put in your email address there, and then boom, it magically appears each weekday. I can hear JT now. It doesn't come out every day. We're not going to do that to them. They put out great content every day, but the newsletter that comes out on Fridays. And we don't put content out every day on our Facebook group, our Good Things Facebook group, should I say. But when we do, it stirs up a lot of fun and conversation. And today's is just thinking back to the things that maybe you disliked in terms of food as a child, but you enjoy now as an adult. And there are several on the group that says turnip greens. And I feel like... Yes, if you were born and raised with a grandma or an auntie or a grandpa who did gardens, you were definitely exposed to them as a kid. If you had to pick them, wash them, de-stem them and all that, you may not like them as much as a kid as you do as an adult because you definitely appreciate them. But that is one I think I have enjoyed all my life. I had a granny and papa who always grew them fresh. And then my parents did that, and so it was just kind of a staple. I don't ever remember not liking them, but they are still something I truly enjoy now as an adult, for sure. Mainly because when I know they're fresh, I know the work that went into them, and I'm not doing it. So I take advantage of it whenever someone else has done it, particularly like my mom. But yeah, I would think turnip greens is probably one you don't come to appreciate until later in life. A lot of green things on here, too. Brussels sprouts and cabbage, as well as spinach. I'm wondering, is it like the color? I'm sure it's a taste or texture thing.
Well, specifically with Brussels sprouts, that is a taste thing because it wasn't until mid to late 80s, early 90s that some super genius decided to break down Brussels sprouts into its chemical components and found the, what is the word for it? The glucosinolates,
sure.
the bitter flavor that most people associate with Brussels sprouts, especially boiled Brussels sprouts, because it tends to bring more of them out. And they, once they isolated that and found, well, these Brussels sprouts have more of that, these Brussels sprouts have less of that, let's propagate more of the Brussels sprouts that have less of that. So since the 90s, Brussels sprouts have been less and less bitter with every passing year.
More and more people like them. Oh, they're delicious roasted. Really good drizzle little honey.
That kind of goes for the roasted part goes for a lot of vegetables that previous generations didn't care for because previous generations' method of cooking was put it in a pot, add water, salt and pepper, boil it.
And now we have other
boil
ways.
Boil it until it's done. Boiled anything versus roasted anything, 99 times out of 100, roasted's going to be better than boiled.
Yeah, and kids eat with their eyes, right? And so I saw someone mentioned on the group asparagus. Not only does asparagus have a strong fragrance after you eat it, when you go, you know, that can be really off-putting for some people. Grilled asparagus just looks funny. I mean, it tastes delicious. I'm a big fan of it. But if you overcook it at all, I mean, it becomes these really wobbly, stringy-like things on your plate. And to try to convince a kid that that's something that's going to be appetizing, I can see where that, like, hits a big wall.
It looks like you went to an alien planet and chopped down some grass and boiled it and put it on their plate.
Yeah, Yeah, absolutely. So I can see where that can be a little bit of a barrier. Larry from McGee said he wasn't crazy about cabbage, but now he loves it anyway. His wife sort of makes it. If you haven't had like fried cabbage, or I guess a sauteed fried cabbage, to me, man, you're missing out. Like that stuff is so good. I'm not as big on like raw cabbage that some people put in their salads and things. I know that's coleslaw. You can't really call that. It is raw cabbage, but I mean, there's so much dressing in that, you're not tasting it. But cooked cabbage or fried cabbage, as they call it, man, how do you not like that? I mean, the smell's there too, but I feel like it's just got a really good taste. Someone mentioned black-eyed peas. I felt like that's one of the vegetables more kids would try as a kid. I mean, they kind of look funny. I mean, it's a pea that's got, you know, the little black part, but enough little ketchup or some of you mayonnaise in it goes down good. Some of y'all just weren't raised at a granny's house said, this is what we're having for Sunday lunch. You're going to eat it or not. And it shows.
Eat it or do without.
Either or do without. Oh, well, don't do without. You got Sports Talk Mississippi coming up next. They're with you from 3 to 6. Rhino and I'll meet you right back here tomorrow at 2. But until then, I hope you all find time for the good things.
Here's good things for you and I. Here's good things for you. Good things for you.
A Super Talk Mississippi Media Production.